This is Ebony Spectrum, and this week we're focusing on the Democratic National Convention. We have several cuts here for you, so we'd like for you to check them out.
DNC is featuring a number of Republicans this week in an effort to sway swing voters. Former Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, former Congressman Adam Kinzinger, and former Trump administration official Olivia Troy will be speaking either today or tomorrow. Meanwhile, former Trump White House press secretary Stephanie Grisham and Mesa, Arizona Mayor John Giles spoke yesterday, slamming former President Trump.
Behind closed doors, Trump mocks his supporters. He calls them basement dwellers. On a hospital visit one time when people were dying in the ICU, he was mad that the cameras were not watching him. He has no empathy, no morals, and no fidelity to the truth. He used to tell me, "It doesn't matter what you say, Stephanie. Say it enough and people will believe you." But it does matter. What you says matter, and what you don't say matters. When I was press secretary, I got skewered for never holding a White House briefing. It's because, unlike my boss, I never wanted to stand at that podium and lie. Now here I am, behind a podium, advocating for a Democrat. And that's because I love my country more than my party. Tells the truth, she respects the American people, and she has my vote.
I have a confession to make. I'm a lifelong Republican. So I feel a little out of place tonight, but I feel more at home here than in today's Republican Party. The grand old party has been kidnapped by extremists and devolved into a cult. The cult of Donald Trump. I have an urgent message for the majority of Americans who, like me, are in the political middle. John McCain's Republican Party is gone, and we don't owe a damn thing to what's been left behind.
So you're hearing from Republicans there, including that was Stephanie Grisham, who was the chief of staff to Melania Trump, White House press secretary as well, but saying that on January 6, 2021, she texted and produced the text, put it up on the screen, said, "We need to say peaceful protests are fine, but no violence. We should put out a statement."
So she was asking Melania.
To do that, and Melania replied simply, "No."
Wow.
So there you have it. So meanwhile, while Democrats were spreading that optimistic message about America yesterday and last night, former President Donald Trump delivering a dour speech, to put it mildly, about the state of the country as he sees it. At a sheriff's office in Howell, Michigan, Trump spent nearly an hour vilifying migrants and making false claims about crime under the Biden-Harris administration.
Just about every law enforcement group in the country has endorsed us, as you probably have heard. And there's a reason for that, because I believe in law enforcement. The other group doesn't. But you can't walk across the street to get a loaf of bread. You get shot, you get mugged, you get raped. We will stop the plunder, rape, slaughter, and destruction of our American suburbs. I keep the suburbs safe. I stopped low-income towers from rising right alongside of their house. And I'm keeping the illegal aliens away from the suburb. In 2019, they had zero. Now you have thousands of terrorists coming into our country. Thousands of terrorists. These are the people that blew up the World Trade Center. Bad things will happen. They don't arrest people anymore. And they shouldn't arrest people for saying the election was rigged, but they like that. They go after guys like me, but they don't go after people that kill people.
Donald Trump's, of course, describing the plot of Fort Apache, the Bronx. It's a great movie.
It's a great reference, but
it bears absolutely no resemblance to what's happening right now, because he says you get shot if you walk across the street.
Or raped
if you want to get a piece of bread. Crime, I know that these facts, as Ronald Reagan would say, they're such stubborn things, and I know it irritates people who support Donald Trump, but if crime keeps going on the trajectory that it's going right now, it's going to be lower than it was violent crime in 1950. Crime is going in an extraordinarily positive direction right now. We've seen inflation continuing to go down. And again, I just don't know how many times I can say this, but it needs to be repeated because Republicans lie so much about immigration. Illegal border crossings were at a 50-year low when Barack Obama left office and Donald Trump became president of the United States. It skyrocketed after Barack Obama left office. Remember, he was called deporter in chief. Remember that? There's a reason, because illegal border crossings under Obama, Biden were at a 50-year low. Then Donald Trump became president and started to skyrocket. And now illegal border crossings are lower than they were when Donald Trump left office. So I understand that facts don't matter for so many people who support Donald Trump, because how could they?
I wish my TV provider let me choose what I pay for.
Sling let you do that.
Hey, where are you going?
I wish my TV provider let me choose what I pay for and let me pause my subscription when I want.
Sling lets you do that.
Who?
Sling!
I wish my TV provider let me choose what I pay for and let me pause my subscription when I want and have hundreds of free channels.
Sling lets you do that too, Mr. Fish.
Choose and customize your channel lineup or watch for free. Sling lets you do that.
I grew up always on the bigger side as a kid. I was always slightly thicker, big boned. That really continued into adulthood.
Contrave is for adults struggling with obesity or who are overweight with a weight-related condition and should be used with diet and exercise.
Contrave really allowed me to stick to all of these great weight loss programs and plans because I wasn't being overpowered by my cravings. Contrave gave me the power to move forward.
Contrave can cause serious side effects, including suicidal thoughts or actions. Stop taking Contrave and call a healthcare provider right away if you or your family notice any sudden changes in mood, behaviors, thoughts, or feelings. Do not take Contrave if you have any of the situations listed on the screen, including if you have uncontrolled high blood pressure, have had seizures, use other medicines that contain bupropion, or are dependent on opioid pain medicines, or are in opiate withdrawal. Contrave may cause serious side effects listed on the screen, including seizures, risk of opioid overdose or sudden opioid withdrawal, severe allergic reactions, and increases in blood pressure or heart rate.
If you're still supporting Donald Trump, and we could go down the long, long list of things he said and things he's done. I've got to say that Stephanie Grisham email to Melania Trump,
the text
saying, should we say that the protest should be peaceful? And her response being no, really shows just how corrosive that administration was, and the people around Donald Trump. It's inexplicable. It's inexplicable that anybody, any president, any first lady, anybody associated with the White House would not call for peaceful protests. And yet there you have it. At least the president, the first lady, no. While I will say everybody else around Donald Trump, including his children, were desperately trying to get through to him saying, tell them to stop. Fox News hosts who would go on that night and defend Donald Trump after the riots, after the four dead cops, they would defend Donald Trump. But while it was happening, they were desperately asking him for it to stop. His lawyers begging him to tell him to stop. They wouldn't do it. So, yeah, it's... I guess facts really just don't matter, unfortunately, to so many. But
that regardless of where you come from, what you look like, who you love, how you worship, or what's in your bank account, we all deserve the opportunity to build a decent life. All of our contributions deserve to be accepted and valued. Because no one has a monopoly on what it means to be an American. No one.
America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
Hi again, everybody. It's 5 o'clock in New York. It is 4 o'clock in Chicago, where all the action is today. A city still basking in the afterglow of that. Last night's soaring and inspiring speeches from former president and former first lady Barack and Michelle Obama, both delivering powerful and direct messages to the Democratic Party and all of the American people. There's only one 2024 presidential candidate who has committed to putting all of the people first. Former President Barack Obama drawing a clear contrast between Vice President Harris and the Republican nominee.
Kamala Harris won't be focused on her problems. She'll be focused on yours. As president, she won't just cater to her own supporters and punish those who refuse to kiss the ring or bend the knee. She'll work on behalf of every American. That's who Kamala is.
And someone who knows that better than anyone, her own husband, also delivered a touching testimonial and tribute last night, sharing his personal story and his love story with Harris.
We talked for an hour and we laughed. Well, you know that laugh. I love that laugh. And maybe that counted as our first date. Or maybe it was that Saturday night when I picked her up and told her, buckle up, I'm a really bad driver. Because you can't hide anything from Kamala Harris, so you might as well own it. And as I got to know her better and just fell in love fast, I learned what drives Kamala. And it's what you've seen over these past 4 years, and especially these past 4 weeks. She finds joy in pursuing justice. She stands up to bullies just like my parents taught me to. And she likes to see people do well, but hates when they're treated unfairly. She believes this work requires a basic curiosity in just how people are doing. Her empathy is her strength.
Although Vice President Harris was in Milwaukee last night hosting a mega rally of her own, she made sure to catch her husband's speech, posting this sweet moment on social media and writing, "Love you, Dougie." watching him give that speech. More, just as we learn more about Doug, tonight we'll learn more about the other important man in Kamala Harris's life, the person she selected to be her vice president, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, a former high school teacher, former football coach, former National Guardsman, who reportedly has never used a teleprompter before. He will be tonight's keynote speaker. So get ready for night three of the Democratic National Convention as the Democratic Party continues to rally support and enthusiasm. And as Michelle Obama said last night, hope ahead of the election, which is now just 76 days away. That's where we start the hour with my friend and colleague, NBC News political correspondent Jacob Soboroff, back on the convention floor for us. So, Jacob, I wonder if it felt in the room like it felt watching, like the Obamas sort of cracked open what was excitement and enthusiasm and added all this depth of feeling to what the country has been through, and especially the Democratic Party over these last 8 years.
It felt electric, Nicole, and it was a feeling unlike that was the second day of this one. I've been through 4 days of the other convention, through all of the days of all of the conventions so far. It felt unique, and it felt special to the people here, and that's what they told me. Everyone was on their feet. Everyone was locked in, and just that back-to-back 1-2 punch of Michelle Obama and former President Obama, and sort of the spirit. I think a lot of people, myself included, weren't there to experience the spirit of the 2008 campaign, what it was like to be in Denver when President Obama accepted the nomination in that football stadium all those years ago. And it felt like for a lot of us, a little bit of a taste of that, but 20 years later, but in 2024. And when you talk to people about how they were feeling last night, there were smiles on everyone's faces here, because it felt like, again, to use the analogy, the passing of the torch or the turning of the page, a new chapter. And, you know, that extended to elected officials. I'm in the California delegation right now. Actually, I want to bring in Congressman Robert Garcia, because he actually spoke from the stage. I'm going to ask him that exact question. Congressman Garcia, what's going on?
Good. How are you?
Robert Garcia was on the stage from Long Beach, former mayor of Long Beach. And that's how I first got to know you.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to you to be in here last night? Because you, like me, I don't think you were at the convention when Barack Obama accepted the nomination all those years ago.
Yeah.
Did it feel to you maybe a little bit of a taste of what that might have been like?
Oh, I mean, it was electric. Obviously, seeing Barack Obama, seeing Michelle Obama just make the case not just for Kamala Harris, but then make the case against Donald Trump. It just gave me all those feelings that people talked about when they were in that audience when Barack Obama spoke. I was happy to be there. So last night was amazing.
So, you know, you said a little bit of a taste. We got a little bit of a taste of also what it might be like to know and to love from Doug, Kamala Harris. You spoke personally about your relationship with Vice President Harris. You talked about how when your parents died during COVID, you know, she called you. She was one of the first people to call you, and she spoke to you directly. What was that like? What did she say to you then? And what is your relationship? I mean, how do you know her on a personal level?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've known her for years. She, I supported her when she ran for AG. I got to know her work then. She supported me for mayor when I ran for mayor of Long Beach. We've just supported each other. In 2019, I was one of the co-chairs of her national presidential campaign. So strong political allies, and I just love her. I mean, she's a good person, a great person. When my parents had COVID, she not only called me during that time when they were in the hospital, she called me after both my mom and my stepfather passed away. She talked about her mom, how when she lost her mom, talked to me about her faith, about loss. And it was just really comforting at that moment. But she's always done that. She's the person that calls you on your birthday. She calls you to see how you're doing. She's got great personal relationships that go a long way back in our state. And I'm just so glad that tomorrow night, people are going to get to know the Kamala Harris that so many of us know and love. So we're fired up.
Congressman Garcia, it's so good to see you. Thank you very much. Great to see you. So that's another example, Nicole. That was a little bit of sort of a taste of what we got last night. You know, it felt like, you know, seeing, I think for a lot of people in this audience, seeing old friends and Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, former President Obama. And then again, it was this experience of hearing from Doug Emhoff about what it's like to live in a home, to love Kamala Harris and what she's like on a personal level. And Congressman Robert Garcia is one of those people also who knows her just like that. That's why I'm hanging out in the California delegation, because there are a lot of people who have known her for a very long time here. And whether or not they saw this coming, it is a special time for people down here.
You know, we talked yesterday about the family separation policy, and President Obama, Michelle Obama, didn't shy away from talking about being on the receiving end of Trump's cruelty. Michelle Obama said, we know what he's going to do. He's going to make you fear people like me because we're successful, hardworking people who happen to be black. It felt like a warning to her party about what's about to happen. And I peeked over in the break and looked at what they were saying on Fox News. And Jesse Waters is you know, what's old is new. He's still talking about birtherism. He's still trotting out this racist trope with all of his co-hosts nodding along and smiling like it's a joke, like the racism of birtherism is a joke and a legitimate news story to be talking about. What do you think the Democratic Party has learned from watching the hard right, the Trump right, the Republican Party, it's Trump's Republican Party, launch racist attacks against a nominee ahead of this really intense general election season?
Milo's famous sweet tea, 100% natural, three simple ingredients, brewed fresh every day. No wonder taste buds love us. Milo's, delicious is everything.
And yeah, I am a radical. I do believe that we need to get radical.
And Bob Casey has become radical too. Kamala Harris supports open borders. Bob Casey voted for them. Harris wants free health care for illegal immigrants. Bob Casey voted for that too. And they both support amnesty, even for convicted criminals. Harris and Casey, dangerous radicals. It's time to fire Bob Casey. Keystone Renewal Pack is responsible for the content of this advertising.
I think former First Lady Michelle Obama summed it up in a nutshell. She said, we got to do something. And that was sort of the vibe and the energy here on the floor, is that there's no patience for that any longer. Tolerance was preached nonstop, and even from former President Obama talking about, look, it's okay. We should be tolerant of our neighbors and our friends, even when they may say something that we don't agree with or that makes us uncomfortable. It's okay to give people a second chance, whether they're in our families or outside. But by the same token, the message here last night was, there is no time to waste, and it is time to go at it. Look, you're right here. Come over here for a second. Nicole, I always love it. She's here like this close to me, and she's listening to every word I'm saying. What did you take away from that? Thank you very much for saying that. From the do something message from former First Lady Michelle Obama last night. What did it mean to you?
Make phone calls and knock on doors. Go out and talk to voters.
And how about for you?
I do. I run phone banks.
You run phone banks?
I run phone banks.
So how is this election going to be any different? And how is sort of the messaging from this campaign making you sort of change your approach to how you might have done things in the past?
There's a lot more hope and joy. This is reminiscent of 2008 Obama.
What'd I say, Nicole? Reminiscent of 2008 Obama. And I think
and we're in the same group. We run a big group in the San Francisco Bay Area of volunteers, flooding in. People are so willing to work. And for the last year and a half, we had a hard time recruiting people. So this is a joy and an energy.
We've been talking about our emails are clogged right now with former volunteers coming forward saying, I want a phone bank. I phone banked before. I'm back. I want to do it. The energy is unbelievable.
The energy is big right now.
People want to be a part of this. Thank you guys so much. Nice to meet you. Nicole, there's a couple more people over here. When I talk about the energy, there's so much of it over here. Look, everybody's taking a selfie. Can we get in on your selfie right here? One more. Let's go. Yeah. We're live with Nicole Wallace. Everybody say hi.
Washington State's in the house.
Washington State's in the house.
Okay. So everybody, Nicole, when they say do something, take it with Nicole. Turn around so Nicole can see it too. Here we go. Guys, when Michelle Obama said do something last night, what did that mean to you?
It means go out there, vote, knock on doors, register people to vote, write letters to swing state voters to vote, because the margin is very small and we need to win in November. So it means go out there, fight and win.
Right on. At Ari, what are you looking for tonight?
It is exciting. It's downright infectious, even as we try to, you know, follow all the evidence and the storylines, and no one knows what's going to happen when people actually come out to vote. But there's a mood, a vibe is then the word of the week. Enjoy. Sometimes I reach for lyrics and I quote them. Tonight I'm going to quote Joy Reid, because it was just 24 hours ago, give or take, and you were saying something before the musical roll call about culture. And culture is a word that could mean different things to different people in different places. But you were observing that the current cultural energy seemed to be with the Democrats as compared to the Hulk Hogan RNC. And no disrespect to wrestling, which has a storied history. But you said that before the roll call, Joy, and then we saw what continued to unfold, and I think many people are excited about Stevie Wonder tonight. And so culture can mean that which defines the stories we tell in reality and aspiration. It can be the fun, the music, the party, the block party, the dancing, but also it can be the society that we want to be in, which for a lot of people comes in a cultural discourse before a political discourse. And so that's on my mind thinking about Stevie Wonder and the culture, if I may, of Tim Walz, who has, everyone agrees, there are progressive values in his record as governor. I don't think that's a debatable proposition. And yet, what is it about that that seems to scare the right and Kamala Harris's opponents? It appears to be that you can be as progressive as he was as a governor and also have a common sense approach to owning guns while wanting them to be safe. And also put on some camo sometimes, and also respect military service, and also coach football. All these things together is as cultural as it is policy-oriented, Joy. So I'm very interested tonight to see what he does on the main stage with all those themes, which, again, are not as familiar to this huge audience. Night two was as big as night one, slightly outrating the RNC for those keeping track. And so that means, by definition, Joy, a lot more viewers are going to tune in, for Walz tonight. What are you seeing on the floor, and what are you thinking about in all the above?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to build on what you're saying, I mean, the reason that we talk culture so much when we talk about politics, right, is number one, these political parties have become identities for so many people. Mm. And if you think about the identity of the Democratic Party versus the Republican Party, the Republican Party is really about looking back to a time when they thought America was better. They thought America was better in an earlier era, the 1950s. And in some cases, it looks like the 1980s, because that's when Donald Trump was the happiest. And so he's trying to reset the culture of the country to his best era, the 80s. And so that's why you see him with a lot of 80s celebrities, right? That's why if he's with a rapper, it's somebody who's like more popular in the 90s, you know, Kanye West, like somebody who's not as current in terms of his ethos. Whereas the Democratic Party really wraps around the culture of modernity, and the arts are known for being very progressive and very modern. And so it isn't surprising that it's Democrats who attract Beyonce to let their music be used, that it's Democrats who would have Lil Jon, because hip hop is so much a part of modern culture that the right really kind of rejects. And Tim Walz fits into that, in that he is a modern version of manhood, because he's got the most macho man job of all. He's a football coach. He's a high school teacher, but he's also so modern that he understands that girls need to have sanitary napkins and stuff in the bathroom. That is so threatening to the right, because it means a kind of masculinity that's not toxic. And they're like, no, if we don't have toxic masculinity, men are not men. If men are not producing multiple babies, men are not men. But the left and the Democrats are saying, nah, we actually can have like the cool white guy that's like friendly to all the kids, and even the LGBTQ kids feel comfortable. He's a football coach, but he's not mean to them. And that's all Democrats are offering. And so really what this is, you're being offered as America invitations to two house parties. Mm. And the question is, which house party do you want to go to? That's what an election is. What country do you want to be? Do you want to be at house party A, which is the house party that's like the 80s, and it's got like Kid Rock, and it's got, you know, the lady from OnlyFans at it? Or do you want to be at the house party that I'm at right here, where you've got this incredible mix of people, including Republicans, who are all welcome to the barbecue, who everybody gets a plate, no matter who you are, who you love, what you look like, what's your color, your race, your religion. That is what the Democratic Party has become. In the modern era, the Democrats are the house party that everybody's invited to.
I hope people are listening close to what you're saying, and we may have to clip that for the internet. I mean, you just put that so well, and then we have the double entendre of party. These are political parties, but then it's which party do you want? There's a very old saying, ain't no party like a DJ Cassidy party, because a DJ Cassidy party has 50
for
songs
real.
For every state. That's a riff on the saying. But no, I love
for
what
real.
You said there, Joy, and it also reminds us of something that is different this year. Usually campaigns are fighting over what the frame of the issue is, and they disagree. So one side says immigration wall, and the other side says economy progress. So they're literally having different debates, and sometimes the louder screaming message can win by convincing people, well, this is the issue or the problem. What you just reminded everyone is that in a manner that might be bad news for the Republicans, they are overlapping on the message of time. In other words, Kamala Harris is saying we're not going back, and DJ Cassidy is saying let's remix things into the future, and that's the kind of consistent cultural message. And the Republicans aren't resisting that. They're talking about bringing out their old calendar, agreeing with the time reference, but in a way that may not be as appealing. So, well, we've got some time to get into all that. Yeah. I know Alex Wagner's standing nearby with both of us, so we'll see Joy in a second. But we're bringing in, it's official. We can say I have this, I have it official now, Alex. Vibes correspondent, Alex Wagner, also hosts. Secondary title, Alex Wagner.
I assume there's a Chiron somewhere. I can't see it because I'm limited communications capacity, but... Chief Vibes correspondent, I'll demand it in my next rider. Can I tell you that I was just speaking with a couple members of the Georgia delegation, asking them, of course, what's going to unfold in their state in November, and we talked about Lil Jon. Nobody's over it yet. People are still feeling the glow of that roll call. The only people maybe a little bit bummed out are a couple members of the New York delegation who thought that Cassidy should have played maybe Nas instead of Jay-Z as the official New York musical artist. That's for you, Ari. Can I say,
Alex, I'll only briefly say that Empire State of Mind is always inspired, but Nas has New York State of Mind, and the two once battled and are now together. They've performed together as New Yorkers. So I could see it. I could see either side of that.
Listen, there's still more music to be played, Ari. Who can know what awaits us in the coming 48 hours?
Fair.
I will say this, though, because I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head about the sort of choice at hand. And to put a finer point on it, the idea of manhood and what it means for American society writ large, right? MAGAism is this reductive, misogynistic, throwback form, a very regressive form of masculinity that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have offered the country. It's rooted in grievance. And it's coach night here, right? Democrats are offering the country Tim Walz, as Joy said, the football coach who can also be head of the LGBT Gay Straight Alliance at his local high school. I mean, this is a person, and I would say Doug Emhoff, too, two men who are comfortable supporting powerful, capable, intelligent women a woman in particular, Kamala Harris, but women in general as they break glass ceilings as Kamala Harris seeks to lead the nation. It's really, I think, a hinge point in terms of, I'm not going to call it the battle of the sexes, but gender and how we think of traditional roles of men and women. And I don't think you're going to see a better contrast in American politics today than what Tim Walz presents on stage tonight and what we saw at the RNC.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to ask a follow-up, and it's a little bit of a reveal, Alex, because we did get a chance to talk with Governor Gavin Newsom just briefly when he sidled on over to our side of the arena. And we did get a chance off camera to ask him, why no Kendrick Lamar? I mean, if Georgia's going to go big, if they're going to go Atlanta big and bring Lil Jon, why not go bigger and bring Kendrick Lamar? And then I would also ask, Minnesota, no Prince? Like, no Prince, no hologram of Prince? Like, y'all, everyone had an opportunity to go big here.
I thought we had some Prince music. Am I mistaken? And I would just also say,
but no hologram.
Listen, if you're going to talk at Atlanta, oh, no hologram. Right. I hear you on that. I also think, like, if we're talking Atlanta, like, really, can we ignore Andre and Big Boy? Like, Outkast? I'm sorry. Like, there are so many amazing artists from the state of Georgia. It's almost like they should be able to do it two or three times, the roll call. Just, like, a note to future convention programmers. There's a lot of love to be spread from the state of Georgia.
When the Biden and Harris team got to work rebuilding our economy, they knew who they could turn to, American workers. Vice President Harris worked to create good union jobs. We are expanding affordable internet to communities too often overlooked, connecting kids, teachers, healthcare workers, and first responders to technology and opportunity. Some folks out there just making promises. Kamala Harris is actually delivering for America.
Unite the country is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So the Obamas were the headliners for night two of the Democratic National Convention. The former president and first lady did not hold back when it came to Donald Trump delivering fiery speeches in support of Kamala Harris.
She understands that most of us will never be afforded the grace of failing forward. We will never benefit from the affirmative action of generational wealth. If we bankrupt bankrupt a business, if we bankrupt a business or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. If things don't go our way, we don't have the luxury of whining or cheating others to get further ahead. No. We don't get to change the rules so we always win. If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top. Now, unfortunately, we know what comes next. We know folks are going to do everything they can to distort her truth. My husband and I sadly know a little something about this. For years, Donald Trump did everything in his power to try to make people fear us. See, his limited, narrow view of the world made him feel threatened by the existence of two hardworking, highly educated, successful people who happen to be black. I want to know, who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs?
He killed a bipartisan immigration deal written in part by one of the most conservative Republicans in Congress that would have helped secure our southern border, because he thought trying to actually solve the problem would hurt his campaign. He doesn't. Do not boo. Vote. Whether you are a Democrat or a Republican or somewhere in between, we have all had people like that in our lives. People like Kamala's parents, who crossed oceans because they believed in the promise of America. People like Tim's parents, who taught him about the importance of service. Good, hard-working people who weren't famous or powerful, but who managed in countless ways to leave this country just a little bit better than they found it. As much as any policy or program, I believe that's what we yearn for. A return to an America where we work together and look out for each other. A restoration of what Lincoln called, on the eve of civil war, our bonds of affection. An America that taps what he called the better angels of our nature. That is what this election is about.
Joining us now from Chicago, we have U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC News, Katty Kay, Senior Writer for The Dispatch, David Drucker, and Special Correspondent at Vanity Fair, and the host of the Fast Politics podcast, Molly Jongfast. Good to have you all with us this hour, along with Eddie Glaude as well. So, Katty Kay, your thoughts on, first of all, the Obama's primetime speech last night?
So I think Michelle Obama has got to that wonderful age, Mika, that you will understand, of women who get to a certain age and they really don't care anymore. And they've had so much thrown at them, and she has had a lifetime in the political arena of political attacks, and she was going to say what she thought. Yeah. And she delivered it brilliantly. She had some humor, but she was fighting, and she was encouraging everybody else to fight as well. And, you know, there's a reason that you have millions and millions of Americans, and can I say as well, people around the world, wishing that Michelle Obama would run for president. She's not going to, but it is their fervent hope, because she is so good. And she's got better and better. And I got that sense in her when she delivered those lines about, you know, the things that she said about he didn't like successful people who happen to be black. It's probably what she wanted to say in public for very many years, and been held back either by being first lady or running to be first lady or for her husband's career. And right. Now she can say it. And she's got to that stage of her life where she can say what she wants.
Yeah, I will say, Katty, and Jonathan and everybody else around the table, I think Michelle Obama may have reached that age.
At like 15. I don't think she's ever gone, oh, what, should I speak out?
No,
like,
she went,
like Donald Trump.
In 2008, she was sometimes nervous about the way she was going to be perceived if she spoke out too forcefully. I remember her saying that. She couldn't always say exactly what she felt in 2008. And now here she is.
To your point, Joe, I interviewed her when Barack Obama was running the first time.
And 2007.
Just coming out onto the national stage, and she said, we're not going to change for people. We're not doing that. We're coming in and we're staying who we are. And that, you know, that's going to have to work. And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
And I remember she also said to you, you got one shot at us.
Yeah.
You want us, we're here. You don't want us, we're going home. So I do think John Lemire, this, like we said last hour, one of the things that make their speech is so powerful. Michelle Obama's speech, so powerful. Barack Obama's speech, so powerful. Not only are they extraordinary at delivering addresses, but also, again, they don't get out much as far as in the political fray. People are always frustrated. They want them to get out and do more earlier, more often. And here you see last night, wisely, they choose their moments, they pick their spots, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, precisely right. I was talking to some Obama aides yesterday before the speeches who made that point. I mean, Michelle Obama, we basically hear from once every 4 years. She delivers a convention speech. It's a blockbuster. And then she steps off stage again. The Barack Obama, of course, does more than that. And he will, we anticipate, be on the road again for Vice President Harris this October. He's sort of the closer, if you will, for Democrats. But their words carry such weight because we don't hear them that often. And they were, I was in the hall last night on the floor. It was a rapturous response. And a rare moment, frankly, where Barack Obama was perhaps upstaged by someone else, as Michelle Obama, Molly, was just so good. I mean, perhaps the two best orators in the Democratic Party share the same last name. They're in the same household. And it was striking where how Michelle Obama, you know, in 2016, very famously said, when they go low, we go high. Last night, she more or less could have said, when they go low, the hell with that, and really took it to them, and did so, though, in a way, in a very personal way, about, you could see her old visceral dislike of Donald Trump, but also talking to Democrats, talking to beyond to Americans, saying, we're better than this.
Yeah.
Let's start believing in hope again.
Yeah. I mean, when I heard Michelle Obama, I thought, for a minute, I thought, did Democrats elect the wrong Obama? But then when you hear Barack, it's such a gifted orator. But I agree. I mean, there were so many moments in Michelle's speech where I really did think, you know, she hit so many important points, and she's such a private person. We know them to be very private. One of the reasons why we know she'll never run for president. And she brought in a lot of her personal life, like her, you know, she said she had her children through IVF. Mm-hmm. That was a throwaway line, but that was very meaningful. She obviously brought that up because of the Republican attacks on IVF, and I thought that was really important. And then she talked about mothers and her mother and Harris's mother, and I thought that also was an extremely important through line that I think was really meaningful.
David Drucker, just to watch the extraordinary enthusiasm and excitement in that room last night, in that arena the night before, you have to pull back for a moment and remember today is now the 1 month anniversary, if you will, of Joe Biden getting out of the race. Also a political lifetime ago, it feels. And you can't help but think about what a different convention this would have been had he made the decision to stay in the race. We probably wouldn't have seen the loud screams and cheers that we're seeing right now.
No, we wouldn't have. Look, the convention under Biden after that debate in late June was going to be a wake, and not an Irish wake. I mean, it was doom and gloom. And I think one of the things that I've noticed in covering Democrats over the past month, it's just been, like you said, just a month, is that they believe again. And it doesn't mean they're going to win. When you look at polling, Donald Trump still has a lot of staying power on key issues, whether it's border security or the economy. He still leads the vice president, even though she leads him in so many horse race polls now. But it reminds me, and I love, I love sports analogies when it comes to politics because they're so apropos. When a team has been down by 20 points, and they've come roaring back. And now they're, you know, they're down two, they're up two, they're tied, and they've got all that momentum, and the other side can't understand how this happened. It reminds me a little bit of 2016 from the reverse, when, you know, I would interview Democrats and watch them at political rallies, and they had this look and sound of, I can't believe we might lose to this guy. Don't they know what he's saying? Aren't people listening? And you're getting a lot of that now from the Republicans, who are saying, don't they know the vice president's policies? Don't they know what she said? How is this happening? And, you know, one more key point here. You know, I know people have a lot of opinions about the former president, but in 2016, you could look at his message, and he was aggrieved on behalf of so many voters that were unhappy with Washington and unhappy with the broader establishment in the country as they saw it. And so much of his messaging now is that he's aggrieved on behalf of himself, and that's a big difference. Still can win. If you look at the data, this is so tight, but it's just a different feel.
Yeah, this is a close. This is a close race, a very close race. It's basically tied right now, and David's exactly right. The momentum seems to be all on one side, all on the Democratic side, and the question is whether Donald Trump can respond to this surge. And right now, it's not looking. You know, this has not been a good few weeks for him. Yeah. But again, we've got 80 something days. So we're a long way. You know, it was a month ago, a month and a half ago, that Republicans basically were saying they had it. You look at the Republican convention. Everybody that was reporting from the Republican convention said they'd never seen a party so confident as the Republicans that they were going to win. Now they're saying the same thing at the Democratic convention. So.
Joining us now, Senator Alex Padilla of California. Senator, always grateful for your time. Thanks for being with us today. And you know this, I mean, Republicans have been attacking Vice President Harris over her responsibility for and handling of the humanitarian crisis at the border. Are Democrats, you think, effectively countering these attacks?
Look, I believe we are and will continue to when Vice President Harris becomes President Harris, because she has a long track record of being more thoughtful and strategic when it comes to these issues. Look, the fact of the matter is that the numbers of people coming to the southern border of the United States today are lower than at any point during the Biden-Harris administration and lower than they were at the end of the Trump administration. So Republicans who killed the deal because Trump told them to are trying to run away from that fact and trying to, you know, provide that misinformation, disinformation, chaos, and confusion that they're so good at doing. But here's the other point, Jose, knowing Vice President Harris the way that I do, I'm so thankful that she has reminded us that as we address the southern border, because we should, we also have to engage our partners in Central and South America, along with Mexico, to do so. And we cannot leave dreamers, farm workers, other essential workers, long-term residents of the United States who happen to be undocumented out of the conversation.
And look, Senator, I know you know the Latino vote is a huge voting block, looking to be the biggest minority voting block this election. And according to a new poll from BSP Research, which did polling for Joe Biden in 2020, Kamala Harris has a 24-point lead right now with Latino voters. President Biden, however, won Latino voters by 30 points in 2020, according to the exit polls. So what work do you need to do to get more Latino voters to support the Democratic ticket?
Right. So the margin based on polls today is 24, 25 points and growing, right? That's the important factor here. The trend is in absolutely the right direction. One of the reasons I'm so excited about this convention in Chicago this week and for the next 76 days, the rest of the country will get to know the Kamala Harris that I've known, that Californians have known, as a fierce fighter for our values, a coalition builder who knows the Latino community, our issues, our needs, and is going to include us in the campaign and in the administration when she wins. So we're talking, yes, about immigration. And by the way, part of that is also her experience as Attorney General in California when she was focusing on, you know, tackling the transnational gangs that were responsible for drug trafficking, responsible for human trafficking. So it's not just sounding tough on crime or cracking down at the border. It's being strategic and thoughtful about where the problems are. And that's the kind of thinking she's going to bring to the White House. But Latinos also care about health care. You know, more healthcare access under the Biden-Harris administration, which he will build on. We care about education for our children. More access and quality education under this administration that she will build on. More economic opportunity. I'm just so hopeful about continuing the progress we've made these last 4 years.
You know, it's interesting because you actually became senator when Vice President Harris was, you know, chosen by Joe Biden, and now of course you've been the first Latino representative in the Senate of the state of California. How much does inclusivity matter? And Senator, I'm just thinking, you know, even on the budget, on the border bill, many of you weren't even spoken to. When the negotiations were going on. How important is it that Vice President Harris know the importance of our community?
Yeah, look, Vice President Harris gets it. I've been blessed to know her for more than 20 years, not just as colleagues in public service, but to consider her a friend. And yes, representation matters. Under the Biden-Harris administration, you've heard the terms, you know, equity and inclusivity more than any other administration that I can recall. And she's going to continue that. Another, you know, blessing being from California, the most populous state in the nation, the most diverse state in the nation, the biggest economy of any state in the nation. And an economic strength is not in spite of our diversity. It's because of our diversity. So we need to embrace that in our policymaking, in the appointments of judges, for example. I know then Senator Harris sat on the Judiciary Committee. Now I do. And working together, we've appointed the most diverse group of federal judges to the bench than any administration in history. So, you know, representation matters at all levels. And yes, especially in policymaking, when we bring our life experience and perspectives to the deliberations of the Senate. That's why, for example, the COVID relief packages and the infrastructure package are reflective of, you know, disadvantaged communities like we haven't seen before in the history of our country.
Just quickly, if you will, Senator, your response to Donald Trump labeling Vice President Harris a communist, calling her Comrade Kamala.
Yeah, look, he's scared of Kamala. That's the bottom line. And he has, you know, can't do anything but thrash in his anger and name call. I mean, this isn't a playground bully we're talking about. His nicknames are the least of it. Look at Project 2025. This would-be dictator and what he would do to our fundamental rights as Americans. That's what's at stake this November. You know, we're going to make history one way or the other. Either, you know, a would-be dictator, convicted felon is going to be elected president. I don't think so. Or we can elect the first woman of color, just an inspiring figure in Kamala Harris to give us hope and opportunity for the future. God bless America.
It is time to get up and go vote. Listen, the choice is clear. Clearer than anyone else is saying. Did you hear me? Clearer than anyone else is saying. You feel me? We need to choose joy over anger, kindness over recrimination, and peace over war. Every time. We must choose to be above the ugly words, the hateful anger, and the division those words and anger create. We must keep on keeping on until we truly are a united people of these United States. And then we will reach our higher ground. Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready to reach your higher ground? Are you ready to reach a higher ground? Tell me. I want to hear you again. Are you ready? Are we ready? Because you know we need Kamala Harris. Yes, we do. And we need a great man as we do have as a future vice president. You know that. So you know what? I'm depending on you to do, as Spike Lee would say, the right thing. Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready? Are you ready? Mouski, are you ready?
I'm ready, Steve.
Dances, are you ready?
All right, ready, everybody. Clap your hands like this. Everybody clap your hands. Clap, 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 clap. Now somebody scream. Here we go.
Are y'all ready?
Well, you're going to have to get louder than that.
I want y'all to sing with me. Come on. People.
This is McGruff the Crime Dog with an important message. Before you think about buying counterfeit products, think again. You're smart, buy smart. Go for real. Learn more at McGruffPSA.org. This message is brought to you by the United States Patent and Trademark Office and the National Crime Prevention Council.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
There was a young man organizing the march named Byard Rustin. Mm-hmm. And when Byard called people, you couldn't say no. Byard was, first he was Dr. King's lieutenant, but he had the capacity to organize hundreds of thousands of people. And when he has a plan and a program, you know, he calls you and he tells you how the whole thing depends on you. If you don't show up, you don't do what you're supposed to, the whole thing is going to collapse and it's going to be blamed on you. Byard reached out to me and to Ruby and just said, we need somebody
to MC the first part of the program in the March on Washington. While the people are assembling, there needs to be entertainment, and we need somebody to sort of keep it going. So, Ruby, you and Ossie, you are selected.
The late Ossie Davis. For 7 decades, Davis led a distinguished career as an actor, writer, director, and producer. Along with his beloved wife, Ruby Dee, he was a renowned civil rights activist and an unforgettable figure in the African-American struggle for equality. In 1946, he began his acting career in Harlem. He made his film debut in 1950 in the Sidney Poitier film, No Way Out. Davis experienced many of the same struggles that most African-American actors of his generation underwent. He wanted to act but did not want to play stereotypical subservient roles such as butler that were the standard for African-American actors of his generation. Instead, he tried to follow the example of Poitier and played more distinguished characters. When he found it necessary to play a Pullman porter or a butler, he tried to inject the role with a certain degree of dignity. In 1998, Davis and Ruby Dee published their dual autobiography, In This Life Together, in celebration of their 50th wedding anniversary. On February 4th, 2005, Davis was found dead in Miami, where he was making a movie. I'm John L. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Ossie and Ruby, In This Life Together, in Black America.
In the Hollywood entertainment industry syndrome, professional or an actor is looked on as a celebrity, as a commodity, and is taught to teach the public to worship himself or herself as an object of divine whatever. And if you begin to consider only yourself, if yourself is your only object, then all other things will begin to fall away from you. You have to learn in this business that yourself cannot be your only object. You have to say, myself and my wife and my children, those are the things that mean the most to me, and I don't care what fame does or celebrity does, that's where I will be going, and that's where I stake my claim. You have to be tough and say, I'm going to make this marriage work, because if I lose this one, the only thing I can do is get another, which will be just like it, so I might as well make this one work.
Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee were one of the most revered couples of the American stage, two of the most prolific and fearless artists in American culture. As individual and as a team, they created profound and lasting work that has touched all of us. With courage and tenacity, they often broke new ground for African Americans and opened many a door previously shut tight to African American artists. This generation may recognize Davis and Dee for their appearances in several Spike Lee movies, including Malcolm X, in which Davis played himself, having delivered the eulogy for the slain civil rights leader. Born on December 18, 1917, in Cogsdale, Georgia, the oldest of five children, Davis grew up in Waycross, Georgia. On December 9, 1948, Davis and Ruby Dee were married. In 1950, they made their film debut in No Way Out with Sidney Poitier, and then starred together on Broadway in A Raisin in the Sun. In honoring this legendary couple and celebrating the birthday of Davis, In Black America presents this rebroadcast of a 1998 interview regarding the publication of their dual autobiography.
I finally persuaded Ossie to write this book, and after 50 years later, you know, and so we finished that. William Morris is publishing it. It chronicles our lives from before we. I mean, it's about our lives from before we met each other to when we met, and all through our time up until now.
One. Seems to forget that all of us are human beings under our stardom or whatever our vocation. Was it difficult in going back and reliving those early years?
Not difficult in an emotional sense.
Sometimes it was that too.
It was that. But what was difficult was that we found that we had different memories often of the same thing.
Okay.
And sometimes we couldn't reconcile our differences. So I wrote my version. Ruby wrote her version. May the best contestant emerge triumphant.
And then sometimes it's conversation, sometimes it's, dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then we take chapters. The format kind of varies, you know, like that.
like life does.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you all to put this work together?
2 solid years.
But I would honestly, after just it wasn't solid because in between that we were working, one of us would be away, and thank God Ossie's a writer in the family, that he kind of kept us on track, and we were working with a wonderful, well, you know, Sidney Mahone, whom I know as a dramaturg, and so